Hi, I'm Lauren Gilger, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each Friday, we review the biggest stories of the week with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here is this week's episode.
This is about security at the border and making sure that we're keeping criminal elements out of our communities.
If you're going to be a true partnership task force, you would engage your partners to the point of what's the operation? What are we doing on this? What's this really mean? What's the impact? What do I need to have?
I'm not opposed to diversity training, and I realize that there is prejudice in the world, but we just have to do it very carefully and make sure it's correctly done without a bias on one side or the other.
We are at that point. I mean, that is a crisis when a president violates a federal judge's order.
I cannot believe that we are sitting here debating the qualifications of a lifelong public servant in an attempt for the majority party to try to weaponize this moment against the governor.
This issue is too important to be politicized, and I am disheartened to see elected leaders dangle the security of you and your families so that they can go on a political power trip at your expense.
This morning, I am joined by two politicos from both sides of the aisle. We've got Doug Cole, Republican consultant with High Ground. Hi there, Doug.
Good morning, Lauren.
And we've got Sam Richard, a Democratic strategist with Consilium Consulting. Hi, Sam.
Good morning. Great
Thanks
to be here.
Thanks, you both, for coming in. I want to begin this morning at the border. We're watching what the new Trump administration calls mass deportations play out here and across the country, which is really, it seems, what most Arizona voters voted for last year. They knew that was coming. Also, we're seeing the Democrats kind of shift in this new political reality. And that was a good example this week from the governor. We saw the Democratic governor, Katie Hobbs, announce a new task force, Operation Desert Guardian. This creates a state partnership on combating cartels with the Trump administration. So it's sort of a partnership between the feds and the state. And Doug, I want to start with you on this one because there are practical results of this we could talk about, but let's talk about the political calculation behind this first.
Sure. Well, we all know that especially here in Arizona, it's border. And then when you get finished talking about the border, you got to talk more about the border.
Yes.
So we have this new Operation Desert Guardian that the governor announced this week. And you know, she had disbanded Doug Ducey's task force back in 2023. And also for your listeners, there's also a fund that the legislature has funded all these years for border enforcement. I think there's like $23 million left in that right now.
Mm-hmm.
But this task force, when asked, she said, I'm going to focus on the four border counties. I'm going to focus on drug cartels. Because drug cartels is a safe space for her, because she's made it very clear she's not going to go for Trump going to schools, going into churches, and is not going to go for bounty hunters, which has been a topic of discussion here in the state legislature.
Yeah.
But going after drug cartels because they're violent. They bring fentanyl across. They bring other bad drugs across. So that's a good space for her to go after the independent voter. Because she's not going to get the far right voter,
and she is thinking about re-election.
Re-election, yeah. And remember, the Cook Report has her as one of the two most vulnerable governors. So she has to occupy some space in the border debate. And going after the cartels, I think, is a very safe space for her. And I think that we had the Cochise County Sheriff Daniel was on the radio and in other media saying, applauding the governor for reaching out to him. And he's a far right Republican reaching out to her and applauding her. So I think if you know, the proof's going to be in the pudding and to see what comes out of this. But, you know, with her support of the Lake and Riley Act, the first bill that Trump signed in his second term here, along with our two senators, I think she's trying to thread the needle because the far left of her party is aghast by some of these things.
Right. So, Sam, let's talk to you about that because, right, we saw our two Democratic senators, Ruben Gallego and Mark Kelly, both vote for the Lake and Riley Act as well. And I think Gallego was a co-sponsor of it.
He was, yeah.
I mean, so all the Democrats seem to be trying to thread the needle on this.
Yeah.
Will it work? Can you separate the border and border security from immigration and people in your community.
Yeah. You know, Laura, I'm thinking back to a conversation that we had about 4 months ago before the election on this very topic. And I think one of the things that Doug mentioned was that this, you know, perhaps is maybe a look to the election that is 613 days away. Not that anybody's counting. But I think this actually, this posture has much more to do with the election that happened about 113 days ago, where voters in Arizona specifically, but really across the country, signaled that we can understand a difference between safety and security of the border to really define what our country is. And then an immigration policy that defines who our country is in terms of the humanity that we have for people who want to join the American way. And I think that that is really what the governor and her allies are really trying to chart that course. And I think that with the support of Republicans that Doug mentioned, like the Cochise County Sheriff, you're seeing that come to bear, right? This is slowly becoming a space where there is room for post-partisan solutions to a topic that really has for the last 30 to 40 years been deeply, deeply partisan.
Well, and it wasn't just, I should also mention, besides Sheriff Daniels down in Cochise County, the Director of Homeland Security, Trump's Director of Homeland Security, former South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, tweeted immediately out praising Governor Hobbs for this new task force.
Yes. And I think that there will be a lot of agreement. And obviously we saw that, right? I think abortion is a hot button issue, right? But Prop 139 had roughly the same vote spread that Proposition 314, which was the border a ballot initiative, had. So I think that what we're seeing is really this maybe realignment or this re-understanding of a difference between the safety and security of defining what our country is and, you know, the care and the humanity that requires of defining who our country is.
Do you anticipate any backlash from the left, Sam?
I think that's already happened for sure. But I think that we're at a moment right now where there's a lot of things for, you know, the progressive left to focus on. And I think that that you're seeing, you know, the center left and the center right come together on really, you know, smart headed solutions on what the path forward looks like.
OK, let's move on to another big issue of the moment that the left is also probably angry about. DEI, right? Diversity, equity and inclusion, something of a third rail now in the Trump administration. They're ordering universities to stop race conscious and DEI based programs or, you know, at the threat of losing federal funding. We saw the University of Arizona. They've tweaked some things. They're making some moves toward getting rid of some DEI initiatives and language. Now, just yesterday, the state Senate voted to slash state funding to public universities and community colleges that teach DEI ideology. Doug, is this a popular issue with Republican voters? What do they think about this?
Absolutely. Yeah. This is a base issue for Republican voters. And the Trump administration and other leaders, such as our Senate President Warren Peterson, who sent a letter out to the universities a month ago on this exact same topic. And then we have the first day of President Trump's being in office. He puts out the executive order and really, really raises this issue to front and center. Why this is significant for public institutions such as the University of Arizona, because they get a lot of federal dollars.
Yeah.
The University of Arizona is the premier research institution here in the state of Arizona. It's a land-grant college. You get one land-grant college in every state. It's Arizona's land-grant college. So it sucks up a lot of federal funding. And we all know the University of Arizona has been having some funding issues here in the last 8 months to a year. So the new president is taking this very seriously and is taking President Peterson's letter seriously. He's taking the Trump administration's seriously. And of course, it's going to cause some backlash, okay? Mm-hmm. But this is an institution of over 50,000 students, and we had a petition of what that was passed around that had 900 students out of the 1,500 that were on the initial petition. Mm. I don't think that's a big number, working on campaigns, but this debate's going to continue. And I totally get what the new administration down in Tucson is doing.
What do you think, Sam? I mean, like, is there a calculation that these universities have to make? How do you anticipate the other major universities here having to respond to this?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with the other community colleges and universities after the U of A response continues to take shape. But I think one point that Doug said, I think, is absolutely right and something to point to. This is 100% like the red meat equivalent of that base issue right now on the anti-woke kind of mindset. But I think one of the reasons why the right is pushing so hard on it is the exact reason that Doug's talking about. There's only 1,500 people in a university that's just shy of 55,000 enrollment that doesn't count the, you know, maybe 5,000, 7,500 faculty and staff on top of that, that also had some signatures added to that list. So I think what you're seeing is really, you know, a lot of tired response to this anti-woke. And I think that there's really, the reality is that this university is not going away. It will always teach, the history and the future. And when you can't do either of those things without acknowledging, either through a land acknowledgement or policies that represent how diverse reality is. So what we call it, how we approach it, I think is always going to change. And I think that we've seen that ever since the thieving 13th legislature of Arizona's territory granted the U of A their status. And I think that that's something that will be interesting to watch. But this is mostly noise and I think mostly about the money that's on the line for U of A's new president and the realities he's facing.
I want to turn now to the state legislature. One of the big stories going into this legislative session, which really isn't that far in yet, right, is this emboldened GOP majority that actually expanded their reach in both houses when many expected them to lose seats. But they still have to answer to or go around a Democratic governor, right? So let's just check in this week on how this is going. So this week we saw the GOP majority in the Senate reject one of Hobbs' nominees, Joan Servais, who in effect has been running the Department of Housing for some time now. They claim she has committed fraud, plagiarism. This got pretty ugly, Sam.
Yeah, it really did. And Joan is a dear, dear friend who has incredible talent that I think Arizona is missing out on for the next 2 to 6 years of Governor Hobbs' leadership. And I'm deeply saddened by that on a personal level. But I also think that really what this is about is Senator Hoffman not really understanding his role in this conversation. I think that, you know, you have, you know, a demonstrable track record that he might not really have a full grasp of what his role might be, right? He's under indictment for alleged, you know, being a so-called fake elector. That's what I was trying to stumble through, right? Yeah. But I think that, you know, Governor Hobbs, in her response to what happened on Wednesday, said, you know, if you want to be governor, come on. Like this is my job. I get to name who runs my agencies. These are my agencies.
Right. So it really is about the process, right? And then the GOP did change the process, Doug, a couple years ago when Hobbs took office and created this committee to vet her nominees, and things got pretty ugly.
Yeah. This is my 35th session of working down at the state capitol. I know it's hard to believe, but yes, they took the nominations process of advice and consent that's in the Constitution, and every state has this, and the federal government, they've taken it to another level. They created this special committee called the Committee on Director Nominations, the DNO Committee,
yep.
Because historically, what had happened before Hobbs became governor is if you were the ADOT director, you would be vetted in front of the Transportation Committee. If you were the director of Department of Economic Security, you'd be vetted in front of the Health and Human Services Committee.
Sure.
Now it all goes to this one committee that's headed by Jake Hoffman. So we thought that this had been, you know, there was lawsuits that came out of the 2023 session because you're only allowed to serve a year without being confirmed by the Senate. Most of the directors in the Hobbs administration are serving outside of that time limit right now.
She tried to get around it.
Correct. She tried to get around it by changing their titles, and which Governor Symington did back in the early 90s, but not to the extent that the Hobbs administration done it. But there were lawsuits, and it must be noted that the Speaker and the President won those lawsuits. And then there was a negotiation on how this was going to move forward, and that some would step aside and others would be renominated for those. But that negotiation all seems to have fallen apart again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really has. And I think the overarching thing, or from a 30,000-foot view, I think it's really sending a chill amongst high-quality candidates that might be giving a second thought about whether or not this is what they want to put themselves and their families and their friends through in terms of this entire process. And there's a very long list of qualified people that are currently running our agencies, people like Director Elizabeth Thorson at ADOA, or Director Karen Peters at DEQ, and the list goes on and on from there, that still have not yet had the opportunity to get confirmed with the Senate, but are doing the work of running our state agencies and really doing the work on behalf of the Arizona people. And do they really want to put their name forward? And this is a really, I think that is the scary question that I think a lot of people are asking themselves.
Right. So, Doug, look, what does this say about the way our government is functioning at this point?
Well, I always like to caution people, you know, having been doing this for over three decades, as I said earlier, what goes around comes around.
Mm.
And I, you know, you start making huge systemic changes like this can be very hard to undo in the future. So both the executive and the legislative branch are fully within their lanes and powers of doing what they're doing. But it's really caused gridlock, and I agree with Sam. It's chased and will chase off in the future if this doesn't turn back to how it used to be. We'll chase off highly qualified candidates. Government service, you don't make a lot of money in government service, okay?
Mm.
The government pensions are not what they used to be 20 years ago, okay? So this really is an act of love in life's mission for most of these people. And, you know, I've always, as President Trump gets to put his folks in the cabinet that he sees fit, so should a governor. I mean, the elections have consequences. But there is an advice and consent. It's just what degree of advice and consent. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen the pendulum swing way far towards a very strict interpretation of that by this DINO committee.
Yeah, without question.
There's another big example of this week. We're pretty much in the middle of like a standoff right now between the GOP leadership and the governor over funding for families with people with disabilities, right? Republican lawmakers have refused the governor's request to immediately approve additional funding for about 44,000 Arizonans with developmental disabilities who are in long-term care. Hobbs has said, you know, this is not about politics. We need to get this done. But this seems like something they should be able to agree on. It seems like it's another procedural debate.
It absolutely is a procedural debate. There's some technical questions about who knew what when and why didn't certain folks alert other certain folks around this pending large bill that was going to come due. But I think perhaps folks at the legislature didn't understand that this might not be the fight that you want in terms of the community that's coming out to talk about this. Mm. There is no better advocate than a parent on behalf of a child. And that is who's been showing up to the Capitol every day. Doug and I have seen them. There was a big rally on Wednesday, yeah. And that was preceded by actions every day previous and every day since. This is an issue that will not go away until the parents are satisfied.
Listen, this is really, while this is a $122 million problem right now, and remember it all started because during COVID, the federal government using federal Medicaid dollars allowed the state to pay parents that are caregivers for the kids. And,
right.
And of course, those federal dollars are pulled back. But that's not the big issue. The main event is when access is cut.
Mm.
Medicaid, our Medicaid program here in Arizona, which is at $2.6 billion, is the largest single item in the state, the $17 billion state budget. This is a small debate compared to what's going to happen when the Congress continues their path towards cutting funds for access. That's going to be devastating to our rural hospitals and to Valley Wise, which is our backstop hospital here in the Valley. So this debate over taking care of the most vulnerable in our state is going to be front and center in the months ahead.
Foreshadowing to come.
Absolutely.
Let me turn to one more topic before we let you both go. Arizona Congressman Eli Crane, he's getting some notice from Elon Musk for his efforts to impeach a federal judge that blocked the Trump administration from accessing financial records as part of the Musk sort of DOGE cuts, Department of Government Efficiency. This is pretty norm-defying, I think we could call it, Sam.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is definitely something that is possible, right? We were talking a bit just off air that everything is impeachable. So this is something that could happen. But I think that Congressman Crane is going to find little support in Congress to actually move forward in this in any kind of meaningful way. This is not something that I think is going to actually break through because of the norms, right? We are a society that lives off of the three branches of government. And I think the entirety of our government system would be upended if we didn't have, a strong judiciary. And I think that there's a lot of attention that bleeds through any type of partisan lens that is going to come to fore on that.
Is this bipartisan, though, Doug? Because we're hearing a lot of talk of constitutional crisis, like those three branches not balancing.
Well, that's the foundation of our republic is the three branches of government, and they bring checks on each other. But you got to go back and look at the history. Since the United States has been around, only 15 federal judges have been impeached. 15 in 200 and so many years that our country's been. I can't do the math. I'm a liberal arts major. But anyway, and no one has been impeached. No federal judge has been impeached for rulings from the bench. Mm-hmm. Okay, over the rulings, it's been for fraud. It's been for sexual abuse and, you know, things like that, but never because of how they ruled on the bench. And I think the last one was like in 2010. So it's been a long time. So, yeah, I Eli Crane, he's getting a lot of shout outs from Musk and from MAGAland. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what he's going for because that is his base. And but it continues to whittle away at our checks and balances system of government, where the judiciary opines on actions by the executive and whether in the legislative branch whether laws that were passed are constitutional. That's how it should be. But as we all know, that's getting whittled away time and again. And this is another example of that.
Yeah. All right. We'll have to leave it there for today. Doug Cole with High Ground, Sam Richard with Consilium Consulting. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the biggest stories of the week with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Lauren Gilger. Thanks for listening.